Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 6:46 British Summer Time. Today is July 24th. And of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. Well, let's first start with a review of what's been happening this week, because golly, it has been another extremely eventful week. Following on from last week's really very impressive gains by global stock markets, this was another week of powerful advances for the majority of stock markets. When David and I were doing our review of markets this morning, he mentioned that he was a bit worried by the fact that Asia hadn't followed through, and I said I was worried that that actually Latin America hadn't been making new highs. But as we did our click through, we noticed that a number of Asian markets had made new highs today or had conclusively broken upwards, and some of those were past leaders such as Indonesia. China continues to push ahead in a steepening uptrend, but also remains quite consistent with little ranges or little pauses along the way, and really it would need to take out the progression of higher lows with consecutive days on the downside to really tell us that this advance has run out of steam, and there is no sign of that just yet. Other markets that made new highs today were, for example, Singapore or Hong Kong or Korea. Also, we saw that the Vietnamese market had a rather significant upward dynamic, which broke the progression of lower highs over the last month or so and puts a floor under that market in the short and potentially the medium term. And in Latin America, we see, for example, that they are all doing rather well today, but markets that have broken to the upside are Colombia and Mexico. And there are a number of other markets that are close to their highs. Chile, for example, is close to its all-time highs. And while it hasn't made a new recovery high just yet, it is consolidating very nicely within striking distance of its all-time highs. Brazil is also quite firm. So, right across the boards, there is commonality that this week has seen some of the lagging markets beginning to catch up. And we've seen that a number of the European and US indices are threatening to break upwards if they haven't already done so. And an increasing number of these European indices have broken to the upside. For example, we've seen that Spain has broken upwards, as has the Netherlands or Sweden, for example. Sweden is also notable because it is among those leaders, those technology leaders, and the reviews that I've been doing this week of leading markets or leading shares within leading markets identifies technology as a leading sector across a whole range of markets, although interestingly, not so much in Australia or Canada, which were the reviews that I did today and yesterday. And what we're seeing is that technology markets have broken to the upside this week once more. We've seen that Sweden has had a very good performance, but the Nasdaq down a little bit today, but it has had a very, very good performance this week. And against this backdrop of really quite impressive action on the equity markets, the bond markets have been very flip-floppish. The US Treasury has been up one day, down the next, up slightly in here today. JGBs, which were overextended looking 2 weeks ago, pulled back sharply at the beginning of this week, but found support in here today. So really very choppy action. Euro bunds are slightly weaker in here today, but have been weak all week, have been pulling back all week. But with this choppy action that we're getting in some of these other markets, then the potential for that to infect some of the less choppy government bond markets is adding a bit more risk to this market. The dollar, which was steady most of the week, has weakened rather considerably towards the end of the week and is weaker in here today against some of the major currencies, as well as the commodity currencies, which had been weak or which had been strong against the dollar all the way through. And in the resources sector, we see that industrial metals are pretty firm right across the boards. We see, for example, that nickel is breaking upwards. Tin has surged back, having been quite weak 2 weeks ago. And copper is within striking distance of its highs. Aluminium is also very steady. So we're seeing all of the industrial metals partaking in this bullish phase. Gold has appreciated quite considerably in the last 2 weeks, and it is hovering around this $950 level as I speak. Silver has also been quite firm and is up towards the $14 level and currently sitting around 1387, up 10 cents on the day. Platinum is also relatively steady below this $1,200 level. And in the soft commodities sector, there's quite a bit of chop and change. We see, for example, that the grains are finding support at the lower side of their ranges, that sugar continues to power ahead. Cotton, which had been quite firm and had sustained a move to the upside, came under pressure this week and pulled back somewhat. The coffee market, particularly Arabica, has been quite firm. Orange juice, which had also had a number of consecutive days on the upside in the last few weeks, pulled back rather sharply this week and found support somewhat this week. Oil, very firm, pushing up about $1 a day over the last 10 days, found support in the $60 region, is around $68 as I speak. We also see that it is being led by the Brent crude contract and by gasoline, which are both outperforming the West Texas contracts, and that natural gas, having had really quite positive action in the region of $3 a couple of weeks ago, is steady above $3. And in terms of the global beauty contest, certainly not the most attractive market, but at extremely depressed levels. The lumber market has also firmed rather considerably over the last couple of weeks and remains in this developing base formation. So that is what's been happening over the last week or so, and let's attempt to put some of that into perspective. What we've seen, we continue to have this two-tier equity markets, where the leading markets that are dominated by developing Asia and commodity-producing Latin America continue to make new highs and remain the better performers, both in terms of the percentage gains that they've put in and in terms of their leadership, because they were first to break up from their base formations. We still can't say the same for example, the Dow Jones or the S&P. We've seen that both of these markets have broken up from the two-month ranging phase, and they're pushing up towards the 1,000-point level for the S&P and 10,000 for the Dow. Once they can sustain moves above these rather important psychological levels, then we can say with much better confidence that they have completed their base formations. But for the moment, that's not the case. And the impressive advance that we've seen over the last week has seen that a number of these markets are getting a little bit overbought in the very short term. And for leading markets that have pushed upwards very impressively over the March to June period and ranged in rather shallow reactions from June 3rd to July 13th, and they're now pushing upwards once more, they are increasingly becoming overextended relative to their moving averages. So we are entering a more high-risk phase, although the technical action is really very positive, and there is nothing bearish out there at all. Downward dynamics on consecutive days would cap advances in the short term, and breaks of the progression of higher lows would really indicate to us that we were into a mean reversion phase. But a mean reversion phase is quite different from the really quite bearish arguments that were being proposed by other commentators over the last few months. A number were expecting majority of markets to go down and test their March lows, if not move to significant new lows. And the technical action does not support that view. The technical action does support our view that we've held for a number of months, particularly for those leading markets since October, that this base formation development phase for lagging markets and that phase that has been completed for leading markets is the beginning of a new bull market. Over the medium to longer term, the lows that a number of markets made back in October are likely to have been the lows for the bear market, and we are in the beginning of a new bull market phase. The performance of leading markets is a clear indication to us that the markets that are going to do best, that are going to garner most support, and that the main themes that will drive investor demand over the coming years are likely to be in emerging Asia and commodity-producing Latin America. Even though this week has produced an impressive performance for some of those lagging markets in the USA and Europe, they are likely to lag throughout the bull market phase that has likely taken hold. And while we haven't seen base formation completion for a number of lagging markets, the likelihood is that they are likely to lag throughout. The big investment themes that we can envisage going forward are likely to be in the big population centers of the world, in the growth centers of the world, in the growing consumption of the masses of new middle-class people that have been created in commodity-producing Latin America and increasingly right across the Asian and Middle Eastern regions, in the infrastructure that development that we'll have to go through to support those masses of young people entering the workforce and entering the global economy as consumers. This is the first time that we've seen billions of new people enter the world as consumers rather than being ab largely absent from the global economy for hundreds of years. And that's a powerful investment story. And every great bull market has an alluring story, which by the time it runs its course will have been completely blown out of proportion. But big investment stories do change the world. The technology bubble led to a large number of companies going bust, but the internet changed the world, and it changed the world in the way we do business and the way we live our lives. Just like the railroads changed the world, but led to a lot of investors going broke when some of those companies went bust. And the likely bull market in emerging markets and commodities will change the way we live our lives and the way we appreciate the world. And there is a strong likelihood that it's going to get completely blown out of proportion by the time that bull market runs its course, but we're not there yet. There is still only the mild appreciation that we've entered a multipolar world, that the growing economies of the Asian and Latin American countries are new centers of gravity, that they are growing at faster rates, that their consumption of key commodities is approaching that slowly but surely on a per capita basis that we enjoy in the West, and that the capitalization of their markets is going to increase markedly over the coming decades. And that is likely to change the world as we know it today. That is also going to provide us with fantastic investment opportunities over that time frame, but it's going to be blown out of proportion. And that is why we think that it is also the best contender out of there for the next investment bubble to develop in. And the commodity bull market is intertwined with that. We if we see that billions of new people are entering the world as global consumers, then their per capita consumption of commodities rises, and the supply inelasticity meets rising demand theme that we've espoused for the majority of this decade is likely to continue into the next decade. It is also likely to coincide with advances in technology that will eventually help to prick the bubble in commodities, but that is probably not going to occur for at least a decade and potentially longer. Commodity bull markets have in the past lasted longer than other bull markets, and we are 7 years into a commodity bull. We've had an enormous drawdown or shakeout in the commodity bull, but evidence would suggest that the majority of these commodities are finding support. And the fact that we're seeing huge amounts of fiat currency being produced by the central banks of the world suggests that the trend of for investors to look towards real assets as a store of value is only going to increase over time. And that's why gold is so important, because it's been viewed as a currency for millennia, and all the gold that has ever been mined is still in existence. It's the one true source of, or it's the one asset that is likely to hold its value over a long period of time. And with interest rates at such remarkably low levels, it is not facing any competition from interest-bearing securities. We are in the middle of, well, we're in the latter stages of another one of gold's large consolidations. It's pushing up towards its highs and is looking ripe for a breakout to the upside in the coming months, just like it's done on a number of previous occasions. Over the long term, we've look at the Dow Gold ratio as a measure of the extent to which gold and stock markets are priced relative to each other. And gold has already had a very big advance relative to the Dow Jones. But as we get down into single figures for that ratio, the relative moves that would be needed to create a point move in the ratio start to get very large. That also means that we're in the latter stages of gold's advance relative to stock markets, but the latter stage can last a number of years. And we haven't seen the kind of acceleration or mass participation in the gold market that would characterize the latter stages of the latter phase of the bull market. We characterize bull markets as three separate stages at the chart seminar. You have the initial stage, which is disbelief. You have the second stage, which is acceptance. And you have the third stage, which is euphoria. And we're very much moving from the second stage, which is acceptance. I think everybody at this point accepts that gold is in a bull market. But we don't have the type of mass participation on the retail side that would characterize the euphoria or the end of the euphoria stage. And this transition from the second stage to the third stage will take time. And gold's bull market, or the argument for gold to advance, is also likely to be overmade the closer we get to gold's ultimate high. And we haven't had the massively bullish arguments being widely accepted yet. So gold has plenty of room to advance in the medium term, and over the long term still has the best part of its advance ahead of it, in all likelihood. The fact that we've seen government bond yields rally so remarkably over the last few months. We saw the 10-year in the US go from 2 to 4%, and now it's back to just over 3%. But that was a very big rally. Probably put a low under the market and was probably the top in government bond prices or bottom of this long drawn out decline in government bond yields. It could be a significant amount of time before we see government bond yields pushing up and into a sustainable new uptrend, but the likelihood is that it is going to be increasingly difficult for governments to sell the amount of paper that they are printing. You simply can't print $2 trillion worth of paper and it not be noticed by financial markets. And this is a little bit different. This situation is a little bit different to the kind of situations we've had in the past, because there are so many different governments attempting to borrow in the capital markets, which would suggest that the competition in terms of yields is likely to heat up as time goes by, and that would suggest that yields will have to be higher. In the short to medium term, nobody is thinking about raising interest rates at the moment because central bankers, they think or they have the perception that they can handle the inflation problem once it becomes apparent, whereas they're much more concerned about deflation. So they're going to be very wary about repeating the Japanese mistake of tightening too quickly once recovery gets underway. And that means that interest rates are likely to stay lower for longer in those lagging markets. For clues as to when interest rates will begin to advance, we can probably look to the leading markets because they're likely to experience any type of global inflation problem first. Their economies are likely to overheat in any new growth scenario first. So we can look to the leading markets such as China and parts of Asia for clues or as a lead indicator for when we might expect to see the interest rate environment beginning to turn in the Western world. And indeed, the USA is likely to move ahead of Europe because the European economy or the European business cycle has tended to lag the USA. It has, at least in the last 10 years. But over the longer term, we can expect yields to push higher because of this quantitative easing that has been put in place. Quantitative easing isn't so much of a problem when the velocity of money is continues to decline, because the amount of money being put into the system is just helping to offset the fall off in the velocity of money. But when velocity begins to pick up in any kind of nascent recovery, all of that cash that's been added to the market needs to be sanitized, and that's not particularly difficult when they've been adding it to the short end of the curve. But when they've begun to buy treasuries or longer dated bonds, it's much more difficult to sanitize. And I haven't seen a satisfactory explanation yet of as to how they're going to take the money out of the system once the velocity of money begins to pick up. And that is where we could have an inflationary problem down the road, when that velocity of money starts to pick up. We're not there yet, and nobody is really thinking about inflation as a potential problem in the short to medium term, and we're certainly not going to have wage inflation in the OECD. The chances of having property price inflation is also unlikely in the majority of countries, but where we could begin to see inflation is in commodity prices, because these commodities continue to advance, and we've seen base formation completion in a large number of them. And of course, oil is by far the most important of those, because as oil remains consistent and as it continues to push upwards, that will act as a headwind to the majority of economies, but it will also act as an inflationary pressure as well. And that is something that could act as a headwind. The two things that could derail the stock market advance that we've seen over the last Well, since March, in the majority of cases, would be surging government bond yields, because it is only a matter of time before a rise in government bond yields is deemed to be competitive with the stock market. And the other threat is in a surging oil price, neither of which we have right now, and monetary conditions remain very accommodative in the majority of countries, which are all tailwinds for equity markets, and equity markets continue to advance. And when this impressive rally gives way to a reactionary phase or a reversion to means, which by the time these markets turn around will almost certainly, or in the majority of cases, turned upwards, we'll be looking for these markets to find support at their moving averages. And once they've done that, that will provide us with a probable, reliable entry point in these new bull markets in the majority of stock markets. And we can continue to look to the emerging Asia and commodity producing Latin America to give us the best performance over the medium to longer term. Looking at the Bloomberg screen in front of me, for example, just to hammer this point home. In US dollar terms, the Dow Jones is up 3.5% to date this year. The Nasdaq is up 24.5%, but Brazil is up 76%. Stockholm is up nearly 40%. The Hang Seng is up 38.8%, and Australia is up 27%. So we can see from just that brief snapshot where the best performance has been, and the fact that the better performing markets also led on the upside. They bottomed first, they formed their bases first, they broke upwards first, and they've had some of the very best performances is notable. What has also been what has been very noticeable in the large number of reviews I've done over the last 6 days has been the performance of some of the banking shares. Because in almost every country, you're going to have one bank that has performed extraordinarily well and is outperforming a large number of the other financials in that region. This is particularly true of the USA. There's a handful of banks that are performing extraordinarily well at present. There were a number of them in the highs report that I posted this week, and you could also have thrown in JP Morgan and Wells Fargo. But there are also a large number of banks in the USA which are nowhere near making new highs for on any basis, that have failed utterly to advance from the lows posted earlier this year or late last year, and remain under pressure and are likely to be in need of assistance from the FDIC, or at least assistance from some sort of program to support them. And that alone continues to offer a headwind to the US economy, because a large number of financial institutions remain under extreme pressure. But outside of those, there is also a cohort of financials that are doing very well in this environment, whose balance sheets are not as badly affected, who have been posting profits over the last few months. And given the monetary conditions, given the margins at which banks can lend out their cash, we would expect that operating profits should be impressive in this environment. The fact that so many of these institutions have troubled balance sheets is certainly something that is a headwind for a large number of them. But it's not too difficult to see which banks are going to be the big financial institutions over the coming decades. And certainly, when we look around the world, we can see that certain countries have much more healthy financial institutions than others. And the fact that it is leading markets that have healthy financials is a point that comes very clearly across in a number of the reviews that I've done over the last week. We also see that in the more troubled economies, such as the USA and certain parts of Europe, that it is well capitalized, cash flow positive companies that are outperforming. In other words, cash remains king for a large number of lagging markets. That the economies that have got the best financial institutions, or the perhaps not the best financial institutions, but the least bad ones, are performing best. And there is generally, for example, we look at the Canadian market today, there are a large number of banks breaking upwards, and the Canadian financials are outperforming the wider market in quite spectacular style. There are a large number of resources stocks that are breaking upwards, and there is just about every portion of the commodity complex represented. What was interesting is that Canada also has a number of agricultural companies, but none of them represented in the high and low report that I posted today. And that their absence is also of interest. What we continue to look for is relative strength leaders, because leaders tend to lead in both directions. They often offer some of the most consistent advances. And quite apart from whether we invest in them or not, watching them is likely to give us a lead indication of when we enter the latter stages of this bull market, because leaders will often lead for three quarters of the advance and will often turn down before the wider market. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.